And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How the hell are you?
I'm doing good, Shane. We got a lot of news to get to. And the SEC is a pretty action-packed couple of days here. Mm-hmm. But before we jump into the SEC action, obviously the big news out of Columbia, Missouri there. Before we get into the SEC stuff, Shane, I wanted to ask if you heard about this one. Obviously, Super Bowl 53 is this weekend.
Uh-huh.
It's in Atlanta, New England, and L.A. Rams. It's still weird to say L.A. Rams, but when I say Atlanta, Shane, what comes to your mind first thing? What is Atlanta most known for to you?
SEC championship.
Well, listeners, Shane is a good and faithful husband, and I'm a terrible boyfriend because Atlanta's known for strip clubs. I'll tell you why, Shane. I mean, that's a known fact for a lot of degenerates such as myself. Atlanta's known for their strip clubs. To emphasize that point, Shane, with the Super Bowl down in Atlanta this weekend, apparently if you want to be a licensed stripper to, you know, where it's legal for you to go work in that city, a lot of women from around the country come down for Super Bowl. You know, big spenders are in town, a lot of tourists. You have to go down to, like, the, I think it's the police department or the DMV or whatever.
Yeah.
They print licenses for these strippers to work, and the damn, all the printers in Atlanta are busted down there at the DMV for these strippers coming down and getting their licenses.
Is that true?
That's a true story I read in the Athletic, so.
Hey, well, you can never be, I guess you can be underprepared. They should have saw this one coming if it's like the mecca of strip clubs, but. I'm interested. Do they let them have their license, or are they going to have like less entertainment while these guys are down there?
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to be happening. So anyone down there driving to Atlanta for the Super Bowl, we just wanted to give you a heads up. Strippers may be in short supply. You may want to hit that bar a little bit early this weekend. All right, Shane, enough of those shenanigans. Big news in the SEC. This dropped Thursday afternoon. The NCAA's dropped the hammer, and man, I was really shocked by this. I know this is something that years ago I remember this whole deal, and what the center of this is there was a tutor who was helping some athletes with some classes. I remember this years ago. I just figured this went away because I had never heard of it since, and there was even a time, Shane, this woman was. It was either on Twitter or Facebook. It was some sort of social media. She was out there offering up her story for anyone that would pay off her student loans.
Oh, my God.
And when I saw that, I was like, this woman's just damn crazy, and nothing will ever come of it. But finally, the NCAA came down. Missouri is banned from going to a bowl game for the 2019 season. The athletics program is put on 3 years of probation. The baseball and the softball programs also banned from the postseason. There's going to be some recruiting restrictions, nothing major, but obviously the big one there, missing the bowl game for the 2019 season. A lot of people have Missouri as a top 25 team in the preseason. Mm-hmm. What were your initial thoughts when you saw all this?
My first initial thought was, what's Bryant going to do? You know, I mean, it seems like, has the ink dried? Can he still jump back in that portal, or is it done?
Well, that's an interesting thing, Shane, because when the NCAA announced all this, they released a 29-page document. I went through and I've read that document. I do not recommend anyone reading these documents. They're not very fun to get through, but it's very interesting, Shane. In there, the what's called the Committee on Infractions, they're the ones that hand out these punishments. It's not technically the NCAA. It's like a separate branch of it.
Right.
They are recommending to the NCAA that all seniors on Missouri should be able to transfer freely and not have to sit out. So that would, I would assume that would include Kelly Bryant, who, you know, you mentioned there is the Clemson graduate transfer quarterback. And you got a feel for that guy because he came in here. I don't know if he knew this was a possibility or not. You know, really bad if it's not, if he had no idea. But early reports, the very first one to report this, I believe, was Matt Connolly of the State, who is reporting that Kelly Bryant, regardless of the postseason ban, will be staying at Missouri. Obviously, that can change, but how surprised would you be if Kelly Bryant sticks to his commitment? And I, from what I understand, he's already there working out with the team.
Yeah, I think, honestly, this Barry Odom is pressing the court here. He's trying. I mean, you talk about recruiting. I guarantee he has talked to just about every senior, every player on this team, you know, letting them know everything's going to be fine. My concern is, like, when you look at it, if Kelly went in there to compete for a national championship, and I'm not saying that Mizzou can't do that, but if that was his sole purpose, then I would be worried. But if he was just coming there to, you know, just to showcase and show what kind of talent he has, and then I don't think he leaves, man. I you know, the longer I think about this, you know, if they don't make a national championship run, I mean, how many players are sitting out of bowl games anyway? So is that a big deal, or is just the gauntlet of the SEC going to be enough to showcase him and get him to that next level? So I really think Odom's just, like I said, I think he's recruiting like hell, you know, trying to get these seniors to stay on. Because if that's true that they can transfer, all it takes is one or two, and then you got a momentum wave. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think you make a lot of good points there about Kelly Bryant. Obviously, he picked Missouri for a reason. You know, they have a lot of returning offensive linemen. They got an outstanding tight end. One of their running backs did leave early for the NFL, but they got two other really good ones. They've got some talented receivers. So it is really set up for him, Kelly Bryant, that is, to have success there. I thought the work that Derek Dooley did with Drew Locke, I mean, that was impressive. Mm-hmm. I think that had to have been attractive to Kelly Bryant. And now that we're seeing Drew Locke at the Senior Bowl events and it seems like his stock is on the rise, that's got to give Kelly Bryant a little bit more confidence. So, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, imagine if, I'm not trying to downplay Missouri, but I think the best they were probably looking at is maybe 10-2. Mm-hmm. And that's at the best. You probably are missing out on an opportunity to go to something like a Sugar Bowl, but, you know, we saw a couple of Georgia players sit out the Sugar Bowl, so it's not quite that unusual anymore. I don't think this will factor into his Kelly Bryant's final decision. But you hit on an interesting point, Shane, with Barry Odom. So Barry Odom has released a comment. I'm going to read this comment to you real quick. This is Barry Odom's official response. I wholeheartedly echo the comments stated so well earlier by both Chancellor Cartwright and AD Jim Sturrock. The committee's decision is completely unjust and unfair to our team, to our staff, and to our alumni. I'm grateful for the clear, decisive, and united leadership we have here at Mizzou, and I'm looking forward to do whatever I can to assist with the appeals process. Together, we will fight for the great institution, and I will damn sure fight. That echoes, you know, what he's talking about there. Missouri is fighting this thing, Shane. According to the AD, they did not anticipate any kind of bowl ban. They did think they would probably be put on probation.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where the thing really gets weird, Shane. According to that 29-page document that I told you I read there, in the NCAA's own words, Missouri assisted fully with this investigation, and they have admitted that you know, there were a couple players that did get help by the tutor. And in the NCAA's own words, that's why they were punished so harshly, because they confirmed all this, whereas, and they even specifically noted the North Carolina case from a couple years ago where they were making up classes and making up papers and all that.
Yeah.
North Carolina never admitted that they knew something was wrong there,
right?
Whereas Missouri is saying, you know, we identified this issue, we're working with you, and you're hammering us while you let North Carolina go away. I mean, I think Missouri's got a really good point here. And what this is going to end up doing, if this is what the NCAA decides to do, in my opinion, is it's going to create schools to just say, you know, to hell with the NCAA. Why am I going to work with you on these investigations if all you're going to do is hammer us?
That's a good point. I didn't know this. Mizzou's obviously not been in the SEC long enough, Mike, you know, because you got to plead the fifth, brother. I think that's a valid point. You know, here you got a university coming out and making the investigation, making it easy on the NCAA. And in return, you give them a more harsh penalty. So I don't know. They got maybe take a step back and think about what they're doing and say, hey, you know, let's reward these guys. Let's set that precedent that if you come out, you admit, we'll go easier on you instead of the opposite. Because like you said, this isn't the biggest, you know, conspiracy to happen to college football. But who knows? That conspiracy may be right around the corner. And if, you know, they see this happen to Mizzou, that's the less likely that they're going to communicate with the NCAA. So I'm with you, brother.
Yeah, and the final thing I got to add on this, Shane, the AD there, Jim Sturrick, he made some comments after all this. And according to him, like I said, they're going to fight it. He thinks they're going to win. I don't know if he's just being optimistic there, but he also noted that according to what he's been told, there will be no punishments while Missouri is appealing this. So if they can damn appeal this for a year, that means Missouri could go to a bowl game this upcoming year. And then if the NCAA, you know, says you're still bowl banned or whatever, then it would just apply to the following year. I don't know if Missouri would really want to drag it out that far, but
why not?
If they got an undefeated team, Shane, I say let that appeal ride.
That's it, man. I'm going to appeal it left and right if I got an undefeated season. So let me ask you something real quick about the grad transfers. Mm-hmm. Is there a deadline on? I mean, I know the signing day is right around the corner, but is there a deadline on transferring?
No. We're going to see quite a few, I think, at the end of spring because that's when a lot of guys graduate, and obviously that'll be the end of spring football, you know, and players get buried on the depth chart or players don't like their new coach, new position coach, what have you. I mean, it's just one thing after another could happen. So
if you're a grad transfer, or let's use Mizzou as an example. They release these seniors. They come out spring practice and things aren't working out like they'd like. Not saying that Kelly's not going to win that job, but let's just say Kelly's having to compete a little more than he'd like. Right. Can he transfer after spring game and just start, you know, his senior year somewhere else?
I think with the new NCAA transfer portal, I think you can. I mean, I'm...
Wow.
Because we just had the guy from USC sign his letter of commitment, show up at school, 2 weeks later leave. So, I mean, it's kind of like the Wild West right now. You know what?
All right. Well, last question about this, just because I'm new to this. So they got this appeal going on. Mm-hmm. If there is an appeal process still being held, can the senior transfer thing still be in place, or is it just on hold right now?
You know, I would think it would be on hold until they have that cleared up.
Yeah.
But
that's what I was wondering.
But I also think that the way that things are going, Shane, I mean, there's lawyers involved for all these guys that are transferring.
Mm-hmm.
And once you kind of make it clear that you want to leave, if Missouri says, well, hell, the appeal's still going, we're not allowing you to leave, I think there would be some lawyers involved. So I think the player would ultimately be able to get out of it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's a sticky situation.
I got you. Well, I do want to say this. The greatest tweet I saw today was from my brother, your cousin, EOD Sleep. He said he was talking about Drew Locke, you know, getting called out for cheating in the ninth grade. My brother asked, did he cheat in the ninth grade or since the ninth grade?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, jeez.
All right, Shane, enough Mizzou. You ready to go around the league?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our players, I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, you just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right?
This game's gonna be a street fight. This game's gonna be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Lunch bell, let's get to work.
All right, Shane, first topic here that's piqued my interest the last couple of days here. Ed Orgeron, it's reported that he will be getting an extension at LSU. There's no details because this is not official, but what are your thoughts on that? And would that change at all if he is going to get a raise as well? I know you're a big Coach O guy, so I want to hear what your thoughts are on this.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And the reason is, there's a couple of reasons. One, it feels like the university is going in a uphill direction. I mean, you look at it when his first full season, he had 8 wins, then 9. Last year, he had 10. So, obviously, if you just look at the numbers, and last year was a very tough schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, he was able to beat Georgia. There's a lot of LSU fans that'd love to have that Florida game back, maybe come away with that one. So, yeah, I think Coach O's in a great position. They're recruiting at an all-time high. It feels like he's getting the pieces that he needs. So, yeah, I'm all for keeping Coach O around.
Well, Shane, I'm not against keeping Coach O around. Now, he does have one of the shortest deals in the SEC right now. It only goes up until the end of the 2021 season, so that's mm-hmm. 3 seasons. I'm all for giving him an extension because mm-hmm. I think, especially when you're one of these elite SEC teams, you need to be able to sell to these recruits that, you know, your coach is at least signed through your entire period there.
Right. Yeah, you should have 4 years regardless.
I mean, Alabama, Georgia, all these schools, they're going to be using that against you if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, Shane, I do not, even though LSU just had a hell of a year, and I think Coach O, up until maybe the last 2 or 3 games, was up for Coach of the Year, I would not give him a big raise. And I'll tell you why, Shane, because I don't really think that anyone's going to be stealing Ed Orgeron away from LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to punish him, but you're already paying the defensive coordinator $2.5 million a year. I mean, Coach O's only making 3.5, but still, that's near the bottom of the SEC. But I think it speaks to the fact that he is so reliant on his coordinators. He's just not in high demand. Like, what happens next year if they go, 4-8? And then they're trying to fire him. Then they're going to have this huge buyout. I mean, he's already has a big buyout, even though he doesn't have a big salary. So
I think Coach O, though, I don't think he's in it for the money. I really think that he found his dream job down there. Now, he's all for an extension, guaranteeing him 4 or 5 years. I get that. But I don't think Coach O would turn this job down if there was no money. And LSU's got the money. I mean, hell, they just finished paying off Les. And do they got any other coaches on the hook right now?
They may have Cam Cameron, the former offensive coordinator. He may still be on the books, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
I mean, even if you gave him a little bit more money, that's fine. But I think this is more about the extension of his contract because Coach O – he doesn't want any other job. He is at where he wants to be. So they would be crazy. They're just wasting money if they offer it to him, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I think you made my point for me, Shane. Give him the extension. Don't give him a raise. There's no Sun Belt jobs trying to hire him right now.
No, for sure. Houston's already got a guy, you know, so.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Athens, where I thought this was some pretty interesting comments here from former, I think he was ESPN commentator, Trent Dilfer. He used to run the Elite 11 camp, Super Bowl winning quarterback. And I don't know if you know this, Shane, but he actually just took a job here in Nashville. He's a high school head coach now. But I say all that to get to this. He was asked about Justin Fields going to Georgia. And obviously Trent Dilfer worked with Justin Fields at the Elite 11. He worked with Jake Fromm at the Elite 11. And according to Trent Dilfer, he advised Justin Fields not to go to Georgia before he did sign and ultimately go to Athens. So let's jump to this clip, and then we'll discuss it.
I was probably the only guy that wasn't surprised. I told Justin I didn't think it was a good move to go there. He's a unique talent, one of the best I've ever seen. But I mean, these kids, they think that when they're in high school, they're just going to go in and beat out the stud that's ahead of them. And Jake's a great player. And Jake's a guy that not only is a great player, but he's a player that gets the most out of everybody, and people gravitate towards him. So the dual thing was never going to work, you know, having the two quarterbacks splitting time. And Jake, because of his command of the offense and the success he had as a freshman, to me, I just didn't think it was a good move. I kind of like what Justin's done now. These kids should have the ability to move and go develop as players.
All right, Shane. I mean, it's pretty easy to call this out after the fact. It didn't work. I didn't hear old Trent Dilfer calling this one out while Justin Fields was at Georgia, maybe out of respect to him. But, I mean, I think he was pretty spot on here. But it's pretty interesting to see some, after a guy leaves, you know, someone noting how they kind of recommended him not to go there in the first place, didn't you think?
Yeah. How many times do you see this, you know? Like, I told him not to do it. I mean, I do that all the time. You know? I told him not to jump off that thing. He'd never make it. So I'm with him. So that. But I've always liked Dilfer. I don't know. It seems like those camps, you know, were always good for these players. You know, got them a lot of exposure, and I think made the quarterback, I don't know, kind of made the quarterback frenzy a little bit more enticing going into national signing days. You know, mm-hmm. So I like that aspect. But you know, he made some good points. I think that was more about Fromm than it was Fields. You know, he was just kind of hitting hard on him, talking about how great he is. And if he would just tweak a few things, if he'd get off his lazy ass and run a little bit more, it sound like, you know, move around better in the pocket, become more athletic, then he can be one of the all-time best quarterbacks coming out of the league. So I think that was what I pulled from Trent Dilfer. Not so much that Fields made a mistake. It's just that Fromm is in a better spot.
Yeah, and I think when Justin Fields signed with Georgia – you know, this is a thought that many people had. I mean, had he went to Florida State, Florida, Penn State, you know, there's a couple others. I mean, he would be the starting quarterback right now. Mm-hmm. So it just going to Georgia never really made a ton of sense to a lot of people. But I did want to piggyback off that. I don't want to upset Georgia fans too much here, Shane. But what, in your mind, would it take for Georgia to regret letting Justin Fields go if he's eligible? Let's just imagine that he's eligible immediately at Ohio State.
Yeah.
And Jake Fromm, let's rule out injury because I don't want to go down that road. But if they both are healthy for the entire season, is there any scenario you could see where Georgia being like, damn it, we should have kept Fields over Fromm? Or do you think there's no way that that could happen?
I think there is a way that can happen. And the biggest way of doing that is doing something that Georgia didn't allow Fields to do, and that's throw the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, if they come out and you watch him and all of a sudden he's lighting up and having 300-400-yard passing games, you're going to be like, what could have happened? I mean, if he becomes just a human highlight reel up there, Right. Then absolutely you're going to have regrets. And it's going to be easy to do because, in my opinion, the SEC defenses are so much tougher that I don't think Fields is going to have that going against him. There's going to be games, you know, the Michigan games, Penn State games, things like that, where, you know, maybe defense becomes a factor. But there's going to be a lot of highlight reels coming out of there. So I think that's would make you regret it a little bit. But, you know, just keep it in check, because when it gets in the playoffs and they're playing teams like Alabama and Georgia, then at that point we can really – look and debate if it was a better move keeping Fromm or letting Fields go, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, while Fields does have a ton of hype, you know, a lot of people thought he was the best player, not only quarterback, but best player in the previous recruiting class. If you put all your chips on a guy that's never done it, and you were to some reason discard a guy like Jake Fromm, I mean, that's how people get fired, you know what? Yeah. I mean? So
absolutely.
Clearly think Georgia made the right decision, but it's just something that I wanted to ask you.
Well, and two, one thing about Fromm is he's lost a lot of weapons. How does he do next year? I know he's got plenty. I mean, they've got a stable full of running backs, and they've got a lot of five stars on that team. But mm-hmm. I mean, you got rid of, you know, two or three, I think four of the leading pass catchers on that team. So what does Fromm do next year? What does he do when he has less weapons to work with? So I'm a little worried on that end. And also, I'm curious to see what they do with Fields up there. Did he get immediate playing time? Did that his appeal go through, or is that still lingering?
It's still pending, so we won't know just yet.
Okay. Well, obviously, too, injury, and I know you didn't want to go down that rabbit hole, but if Fromm went down early, you would immediately regret. I don't know what the depth chart looks like past Fromm, so I'm sure they've got somebody, you know, that will just reload and he'll be okay. But at this point, you'd definitely rather have Fields backing him up.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, Shane, they got two true freshmen and a walk-on, former walk-on.
That's what I love it.
That's their backup right now. So, all right, Shane, let's jump to Tennessee, talk to your boys for here for a minute. But I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Wanted to see if you were sweating this out, Shane, because old Tennessee's number one target, five-star offensive tackle Darnell Wright, long considered to be a Tennessee lean, but, you know, for some reason he did not sign during the early signing period. And I'm just wondering if you're getting a little uneasy over there, Shane, because West Virginia, I don't know if you saw this, they sent 10 assistant coaches to his high school. They sent the entire damn house.
Oh, wow.
Remember, you used to be able to do that on the NCAA video game, and that's when you got those late flips. So I'm wondering if you're sweating over there at all over Tennessee's top target getting so much love from the in-state school.
Let's just say my eyebrows are raised, Mike, you know. I mean, that's something that you don't see often. You know, I when I first saw it, I sent you the eye roll emoji, you know. Uh-huh. But there was a lot of people, you know, taking notice, and I thought that was clever. And, you know, they could paint this picture. I mean, he's the best recruit in the state of West Virginia, stay at home, yada, yada, yada. But the one ace that we got in our back pocket, and he hasn't canceled it yet, is his visit this weekend. So we've got plenty of time to wine and dine and buy his mom a house and, you know, get him a new car. So we'll be good, I think.
Well, Shane, it's good to know that you use humor and emojis to hide your pain, because that's what I see there.
If you act like it's a big deal, Mike, it becomes a big deal. You know, the big deal for me, let me ask you, I don't know if you're bringing it up, but let's talk about Teato Yoto or whatever his name is. What's going on there? I'm hearing a lot of rumors that Alabama is the front runner.
Yeah, well, Henry Teato, he just came off an official visit to Alabama. That's the Northern California linebacker that we spoke about last week on the podcast. But, you know, Shane, I honestly don't get too swept up into, you know, what's the latest rumor, because we still got an entire weekend to go. We still got in-house visits from the coaches to go. So there's there's a lot of time here, Shane. I mean, I swear, I fully respect each and all the recruiting analysts and reporters out there, because they work their asses off. Mm-hmm. But one day, Kawaris Crouch, Shane, a week before early signing period, he's going to Clemson. He's eliminated Tennessee. And then he's going to push it till January 1st. And then he signed with Tennessee in early signing. I mean, and that's not an isolated incident. I mean, this happens every day, every year. So if I were you, I would not be too concerned until actual national signing day arrives. You never know when a package comes in the mail and it's full of Tennessee dollar bills. I mean, anything can change. It does seem like Tennessee may be out for the moment, but plenty of time there to recover, in my opinion.
Well, the rumor I heard, Mike, was that he was refusing to let an in-home visit happen this weekend. That was the rumor. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if that happens, you're really worried about getting him.
A final thing I have here on Tennessee, Shane, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, just because obviously the Vols are your team, but BYU, which will be Tennessee's second game of the season, they announced their official 2019 schedule. They do it a little bit later than the SEC teams. Mm-hmm. And they open the season with Utah, which is a really tough game, which is on a Thursday. And then they make that cross-country trip to Neyland Stadium to play Tennessee September 7th. Their opener is going to be on a Thursday, so they're going to have a couple extra days to prepare. But just wanted to get your thoughts, Shane, on maybe some of the listeners can kind of feel this kind of the same deal here, but I'm wondering, as a fan, do you want the team you're playing to be coming off a cupcake like Tennessee's playing Georgia State, or do you want them to be playing one of their toughest games of the season right out the gate? Do you have any preference there?
Well, first off, BYU can have 50 days to prepare for this thing. They're going to get smoked, Mike. But honestly, there's something about cupcakes that I enjoy. Not just eating them, but actually the games themselves. I just love the fact that we don't have to show all of our cards. You know, I feel like the longer we go in the season, the less we have to show, the more beneficial it helps when we hit SEC play. So I don't know how competitive this BYU game's going to be. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if we can just practice on efficiency and our defense the first ball game, I'm all for that. I don't like tough games because they're coin toss. Now, it's different. I do want to say this. If I'm a number one team in the nation, mm-hmm. then I want a tough team. I want to play number two and, you know, find out exactly where we're at, because at the end of the year, we still have a chance to get into that playoffs. You know, Tennessee doesn't have that luxury. We need every win that we can get because mm-hmm. we want to make a bowl game. So that's my only difference. It really depends on the team and where they're at. And but right at this point, as Tennessee, yes, give me a cupcake game week one.
Wow, that's a depressing state of program.
That's where I'm at. Don't make me open another one.
All right, Shay, let's jump to Gainesville, where this is not 100% Florida related. I mean, I think it is related clearly, but Florida State, Shane, I don't know if you saw this, but the other day, I believe this was Wednesday, they tweeted out some kind of infographic. They're touting themselves, Florida State this is, as DBU, which clearly Florida does, LSU does as well. I certainly think both of those schools have a better claim than Florida State. I know Deion Sanders went to FSU, but I think that was about 30 years ago. And Florida State, now keep in mind, Shane, they finished 120th in the nation in pass defense, but old DBU Florida State, they tweeted out a graphic. It's a giant L. Literally, it's in the shape of the L, saying for other schools to stop claiming DBU. And they're, in my mind, they're clearly talking about Florida. What are your thoughts on Florida State's L-shaped graphic here after going 5-7 and missing a bowl game?
Dude, they keep taking L's on social media, don't they? I don't know who's running that account. They need to get fired. But, I don't know. Both of these schools put out talent, FSU and Florida. They've always been known for the defensive backs and cornerbacks. So, I don't know. Honestly, you could look at a lot of different teams in the SEC and claim them as DBU. There's just so much talent coming out of the SEC. So I just think it's funny, just the rumblings before the season starts. And the nice thing is they get to play each other every year, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Well, my favorite thing about that, Shane, is that I kind of mock them on Twitter for their damn L-shaped design there. And now Florida State fans got me out there as a Florida homer. So it just comes full circle, man. Florida State thinks I hate them. Florida thinks I hate them. Apparently I hate everybody.
That's huge news, Mike. I mean, honestly, like if I was ranking the fan bases and their support for SEC, Mike, mm-hmm. Florida was at the bottom. And the fact that you're being considered a homer now, you know, that's big news. We should have led with that.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Mississippi State, where one of their former players, one of their best players in school history, in my opinion, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, he's projected as a top pick in the 2019 NFL draft. A news came out on Thursday that the NFL is not going to invite Jeffrey Simmons to the NFL Combine. And why this is, Shane, because the incident that he had before he enrolled at Mississippi State, where he punched a woman, I mean, it was on videotape, and there was mm-hmm. national outcry, which deservedly so. I mean, it's a terrible video. It's a terrible act. Should have never done it. He was suspended only for half a game, which that kind of added more insult to the situation in a lot of people's eyes. But, you know, while I certainly don't condone that, and I don't condone anything about that video, but, you know, we weren't there. We don't know the specifics of it. But I do know, since he arrived on campus, Jeffrey Simmons, that is, that he has been one of the leaders of Mississippi State, both on and off the field. From all accounts that I've been told, and this is from two coaching staffs and two administrations down there, that he has basically been the perfect ambassador for that program. So, and why, you know, this is a new policy that the NFL has, because I questioned it when I saw Reuben Foster was at the combine a couple of years ago. I know he had some I don't know if he had any violence against women charges at that time. Certainly he's had accusations now,
right.
But just what are your thoughts on the NFL making this stance, and do you think it's good to just blanket everyone with this? I mean, for something someone did in high school, or do you think this is maybe just a scar that Jeffrey Simmons has to live with for the rest of his life potentially?
Yeah, I mean, there's things that he can do to move on from this. And, you know, first off, I want to start off saying that anybody that abuses women is an asshole in my book, you know, and them making a stand to keep him out of the combine, I get that, but you're not making a stand to keep him out of the NFL, you know, right, so what's the point? If I'm Simmons' agent, the first thing I'm going to do is to make sure that he starts, you know, using his platform to express what he did and what he did was wrong, you know, and be sincere about it. And if he shows strides in there, yes, you know, I've always been taught to forgive people, but, it, you know, we don't ever hear the good side. We always hear the bad. So this one right here, I don't know. I question it just because there are a lot of abusers in the NFL right now, and I don't think they're going to keep Jeffrey from it. So I don't understand why I'm making a scene for the combine all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I mean, I agree with, you know, everything you said there, and I understand why he has to be, you know, maybe face extra scrutiny, and he should. I mean, he's going to face that potentially for the rest of his life, and the only way he can turn that around is to, like you said, you know, become an advocate against violence against women, and obviously never do anything like that again. And, you know, his actions the rest of his life will determine how he's truly judged. But it is kind of silly when, you know, he is going to be a top 10 pick. And it's like, well, he's not invited to the combine, but she'll take him 10th overall or hell, 5 overall, what have you. I mean, it is kind of nonsensical when you look at it like that.
Well, I mean, look at Joe Mixon. I mean, that video was all over the place. Yes, he didn't get invited to the NFL scouting combine as well, but, you know, he's the leading running back for Cincinnati Bengals. So, right. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. They pick these different, you know, platforms to stand on, and this one doesn't make sense to me. Either you're against it and you won't allow it, or you're not. So don't be picky choosy.
And a final thing I got on this, it's not going to affect his stock, in my opinion, because he's still got the pro day. He's still got, you know, outstanding film. I think this is not going to affect him at all.
Absolutely.
Final update here on Mississippi State, Shane. Joe Moorhead has made his hire at defensive line coach. And they lost Brian Baker to Alabama. So they've replaced him with Deke Adams, who I believe he was at North Carolina last year, and Memphis had hired him, but obviously Mississippi State did a much better job than Memphis. But this guy is a Meridian, Mississippi native, so I think this is another strong hire by Joe Moorhead, where obviously Joe Moorhead is not a native of the South, clearly not a native of Mississippi, so to continue to surround himself with guys that know the area and have strong, you know, coaching ties to the South. I really like this pickup here from Mississippi State.
Yeah, Deke worked for Memphis football for 27 days and decided to move on. So I wonder if they're going to come out with a video for him. But no, this is a good move, you know. And I told you, man, Joe does not keep a vacant seat open long. He doesn't. It seems to me like he doesn't want to give the impression that there's anything unstable at Mississippi State. So he had a short list, and as soon as old boy was out to Bama, Deke was probably called that same night, you know.
Right. All right, Shane, let's jump to South Carolina, where I thought there was some pretty interesting comments during the Super Bowl media events. Obviously, Todd Gurley, former Georgia running back, he's running back for the LA Rams there. And, you know, they ask him about anything and everything at these events. And one media member asked him about South Carolina offensive coordinator Brian McClendon and why they asked Todd Gurley about him. McClendon was formerly a position coach at Georgia when Gurley was there. And I just thought these comments were Pretty interesting. So let's jump to Chad Gurley, again, speaking on South Carolina offensive coordinator Brian McClendon.
He's one of the biggest reasons, you know, for all our success. Just instilling all those fundamentals, all those practices, all those long talks, all the long days that we had, all the times we had with him, man. He just really, really taught us the whole game, how to be a man, how to practice, how to go about the situation every day. So still talk to Coach McClendon to this day. You know, he's one of the key factors in helping, you know, my game to where it's at. So I definitely give a lot of credit to him, for sure.
All right, Shane. I think anytime you can get one of the best players in the NFL to be talking about a coach from your team, not only, you know, helping you in football, but in life. Mm-hmm. I think this is basically the ultimate recruiting tool, and it just kind of goes to show that Gamecocks got a good one there in McClendon.
Yeah, I'm telling you what, man. If I'm in McClendon's office, I better see a picture with him and Gurley, him and, you know, him and Chubb, him and McKenzie, him mm-hmm. and who's the other one?
Sony Michelle.
I would be using this as a tool. So whenever those players, you know, even if you're going to a visit or something, you know, and you got your phone, maybe you want to show a picture and you accidentally have to scan through a few with Gurley, you know what I'm saying? Just make it sound like you're hanging out with the best running back in the NFL. So take advantage of it. I'm surprised, you know, I had no clue that he was the one that recruited all these guys down there.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, I mean, we have had questions about this guy, particularly heading into the year, and, you know, Jake Bentley didn't really take a huge leap this year. He's going into a, you know, a very, I would say a crossroads, honestly, because they mm-hmm. got one of the most impressive freshman quarterbacks in the nation coming out, although he made a mistake the other day calling out Tennessee's basketball program. But Brian McClendon, you know, he's got some weapons to work with. He needs to take it to the next level. He's done it in a couple games last year. But, you know, when you just the more comments you hear about this guy, I think South Carolina was wise to promote him and stick with him there.
Yeah, I really like what they're doing there. I think they're on the verge of something in South Carolina. Just call it a gut feeling, Mike.
And a final update here on the Gamecocks, Shane, quickly. JT Ebay, one of their safeties, who I believe he only played in 4 games last year, but there's a good chance he's one of their starters. He was granted a 6th year of eligibility, so that's also some good news there for the Gamecocks on defense.
What was it for? I mean, was it medical? I don't know.
Yeah, because this was a situation where, like I said, I think he only played in a couple games last year, and mm-hmm. you know, they kept waiting and waiting for him to come back, but he just was never healthy enough to. He suffered an injury, so I think this is, from what I understand, they kind of have done away with medical redshirts, but I guess they're still granting, you know, these 6 years of eligibility. So,
I got you. Good for them.
All right, Shane. Final update around the league here. I got Alabama. They're reportedly bringing in old Mike Stoops, the brother of Mark Stoops and Bob Stoops, former Oklahoma defensive coordinator that was fired. And my question to you, Shane, is how long before Mike Stoops, who's been at Alabama for about 12 hours, passes up Butch Jones on the coaching depth chart?
It may happen, but Mike Stoops, I don't know. He wasn't that good of a coach to begin with, and I thought it was interesting. Now, he was defensive coordinator last year, right?
Yeah, and he got fired in the middle of the year.
Yeah, okay. And you saw just how great that defense was there in the playoffs. So I'm not saying that – I don't know. This may be a one-stop shop for Stoops. I don't see him sticking in Alabama like Butch, you know, but – I don't know. I'm looking at his record. That's all I'm going off. I don't know much about him. I think he went down to Arizona or something like that for a while. And
yeah.
And the records speak loud and clear. He's a 500 coach. So, but he knows people, and it's a big name. And if he can get them up out of the, was he going to be assistant, right?
Yeah, he's going to be an off the field kind of like. He's going to be Butch. When Butch is washing the cars, Stoops is going to be getting the coffee. That's how I understand it.
I would put Stoops into something, man. Get him on the road because, I mean, everybody in Texas knows him. Everybody in Oklahoma knows him. I mean, mm-hmm. it seems like you could use that as a tool down there because people recognize the name. So I don't know. I guess he's just going to sit down there and smoke cigars, I guess.
All right, Shane. So that's it for news around the league. But I did have some odds that I thought was pretty interesting. And the reason I really like these, Shane, because not a lot of books will put out odds on every single team in the SEC. They like to pick and choose, you know, the elite teams. But Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, the Vegas sportsbook there, they have odds on each and every SEC team to win it all, not just win the SEC, but win the national championship. So I'm going to go in order, Shane, from best odds to worst odds, starting with Alabama, who has 5-2 odds. So those are terrible odds. I mean, they're great odds, but you're not going to make much money. Georgia at 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
Florida, 25-1. Texas A&M, 30-1. LSU, also at 30-1. Auburn, 40-1. Mississippi State, 75-1. Missouri, 200-1, which we can probably mark that off now. Arkansas, 500-1. South Carolina, also 500-1. Tennessee, also 500-1. And then last, Kentucky, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt, all at 1,000-1.
Oh, wow.
Any thoughts jump out to you about those odds?
A few, man. The fact Kentucky's in the same realm with Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, that one stands out. Obviously, I don't think Kentucky's going to win a national champ, but I thought their odds would be a little bit higher on this list. I mean, I get they lost a few pieces, but they still got a lot of people returning. So that one stands out. The fact that South Carolina and Tennessee are in the same realm with Arkansas stands out. I think you could have switched Arkansas and Kentucky, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If you're putting money on one of these, Mike, which one are you looking at? I like the Florida. I like Texas A&M there at 30-1.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if I'm putting money, I'm probably putting on one of those two teams. What about you?
I'll tell you what, Shane. I'm going to push all my chips in right now if I can on Auburn at 40-1. I like those odds, and I like them for a couple of reasons. Obviously, I was down on Auburn last year.
Yeah.
Well, everyone was high on them. I ride the roller coaster with Auburn. I go the opposite every year. I'm not he's sitting here saying Auburn is going to win it all. That's my favorite on this board here.
Mm-hmm.
If they get a quarterback, particularly a running quarterback, I think they can be really dangerous. You know, they're bringing back a ton of defensive linemen. I think that defense could be really good if they get the run game going, particularly, like I said, with a running quarterback. I think there's a chance Auburn is the surprise of the SEC. As for a couple thoughts on here, I agree with you at Arkansas. I like the direction they're kind of going, but 500-1, I mean, they're clearly at that 1,000-1 odds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kentucky should be ahead of South Carolina and Tennessee. Mississippi State, 75-1. I don't understand that. They should be about 300-1 in my book.
Yeah.
Texas A&M, 30. Yeah, the rest of these I'm good about. But also, I want to caution fans because, like you, the main reaction that I saw when I put these odds out, Kentucky 1,000-1, no one could comprehend that. But it's also important to note that this is not necessarily how it's going to play out, obviously. I mean, these are just odds. But why these sports books put them at these numbers is because there's not a big Kentucky football following. So there's not many people betting on that. That's the same as Vanderbilt. They're not saying that Kentucky and Vanderbilt are equal. They're just not anticipating anyone to put money on that. I mean, if you're a diehard Kentucky fan and maybe you are feeling confident about something, hell, maybe putting money on that thousand. I mean, just put
a dollar, man. You win a thousand. So
right. So that may be worth something right there. I'm with you. I mean, Kentucky is not going to win the national championship, but they've got a hell of a lot better odds than about the five or six teams right around them. So there's a ton of value right there.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying – and just because I said Florida and A&M, it's not saying I don't think Bama and Georgia have a better shot. It's just if it's under 10-1, I usually don't like to put money on it because then you're just – I mean, you're not making that much. If you put $100 on Texas A&M, you know, now we're talking $3,000. So that's the numbers I'm looking for.
All right, Shane, final thing I got for you here. I did a little bit of research this, well, the past week or so. This took me a long time because I'm terrible at math. But I just thought this was pretty interesting. I did not go into this with any preconceived notions. I just wanted to see which returning SEC starting quarterbacks, and I got eight listed here, which one of them are going to be the best on throwing on third down, because that was obviously the most important down. And I was surprised to find out that Jarrett Garantano, Shane, far and away the best in the SEC, has completed 65% of his third down passes. Keep in mind, so Tua's only got 58.5. Jake Fromm, 56.9%. Terry Wilson, 55%. Joe Burrow, 54%. Jake Bentley, 52%. Kellen Mond, 50%. And Felipe Franks all the way down at 47%. Any thoughts on these numbers?
Yeah, Mike. The thing about these numbers, you can look at them different ways. You can put them in, and it makes somebody sound good. But I would be curious, out of that 65 of Jarrett Garantano's, how many of those resulted in a first down? You know what I'm saying? Because the one thing about Jarrett, if it's third and eight, he can throw a 5-yard route, but it didn't get us a first down. He was efficient. But, you know, efficiency doesn't move the chains all the time. So that's my only concern with these numbers, is there was a lot of third and longs that resulted in completions but not first downs.
Well, Shane, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't think I would take a dive that deep, because I did.
Uh-oh.
So of Jarrett Garantano's 39 completions on third down, 27 of those resulted in first down, which is tied for the most in the SEC. So he's not throwing behind the sticks as many people anticipate. Now, he did have 10, so you're seeing 10 out of 39, so basically one out of four. But his numbers, I mean, you look at a guy like Terry Wilson from Kentucky, 15 of his first downs or third down completions did not reach the first down marker. So Jake Bentley had 11. Joe Burrow had 15, so...
So he was leading the SEC for that?
Yeah, the leader was Joe Burrow at 15 for not completing it beyond the first down marker.
Okay. Yeah, no, that – well, then coach should be taking a look at that and stop running on third down and start passing more. So, I mean, that was – honestly, if you look at Tennessee's play, that was the biggest complaint I had, was just some of the damn play calling. So, but hell, it's gone. You know, we got a old Slim Jim back, so we're going to see what well, since we got him, what was Fromm?
Jake Fromm. Now, here's an interesting one with Jake Fromm, Shane, because in the games Georgia won, Fromm was completing 68% of his third down throws, which is pretty remarkable. But in the games they lost, Shane, Jake Fromm was the worst in the SEC at 41%. So, basically, when they needed Jake Fromm to bail him out, he was unable to do it. And in the games they were controlling the clock, I would imagine also controlling, you know, the distance between first down marker, he slices and dices defense. So that, I mean, that's an interesting one right there.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see how those play out. Yeah. I mean, these numbers, I suck at numbers, Mike. I suck at math. So thank you for doing all that work, though. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I've got a big, big article coming out on Saturday that'll break all that down. So I'll retweet all that to anyone that's curious. So I got, and this is not just on Garantano. This is on all the SEC returning quarterbacks. So recommended read, and it's broken down in charts and graphs. So it's easy for us people that are a little bit slow on math. So
beautiful, absolutely.
All right, Shane, that's all I got. You got anything before we hop off here?
Yeah, buddy, I got a review to read. All right, we got us a new review. This one comes from the Fishman 06. 5 stars, waiting on a new podcast. Been listening all season and just got an iPhone, so I can finally leave one of those 5-star reviews you love so much. Keep up the good work, guys, and I look forward to every podcast. Go Dogs. Dogs in the background. Well, I appreciate you, brother or ma'am. Well, it has to be a sir, Fishman. So I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for spending $1,000 to get an iPhone, leave a 5-star review for us. I really do appreciate that. Taking out a second mortgage like that. That is amazing. I appreciate all the listeners hanging out with us. You know, if you do have you an iPhone, the iReviews do help out. But if not, you know what? Who cares? We're just hanging out. So I think we're pretty much one of the only shows that are going to keep going during the off season. We have decided to do 2 days a week. Is that right, Mike?
Well, I'm glad you say that, Shane, because next week the game plan is to do three. But it's a special week. It's obviously National Signing Day. So what I'm shooting for Monday, we're going to recap a lot of the recruiting action from the weekend because there'll be final official visits. Want to do a show that comes out on Wednesday to kind of preview National Signing Day. And then obviously Thursday, we're going to be reacting to what happened on National Signing Day. So there's a ton of recruiting stuff to be happening in the next week. So we're going to do our best to get you guys three episodes next week. Because after that, Shane, it's going to be the dark, dark off season until spring football starts kicking. So I think we got to get them in while we can.
Absolutely, man. So three next week, then down to two after that, right? So we'll be, what did we decide, Monday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Friday?
Yeah, to be determined on that.
Okay, I love it. I love the procrastination.
As you guys can see, we're pretty highly organized over here. But
oh, man. Well, good deal, buddy. That's all I got.
All right, Shane, thanks for joining me as always, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.